And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the handful in attendance and the millions listening on the web on skidrow.la, this is Mat Time Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Mat Time Radio.
Sir.
And we're coming up on lucky episode number 13. And we got a lot of exciting guests in studio with us tonight. We also have Hector, our resident boxing guru.
Going Ritz.
And
you've got to introduce yourself, man. Yeah, who are you? What's your name?
Oh, I'm Rich.
Oh, what's up, Rich? I'm Creo. Nice to meet you.
Hey, what's up? Nice to meet you, buddy.
Hey, what's up, Hector?
I'm doing great, bro. How's it going?
It's going good, man. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So why don't you let them know, for everyone out there listening, who we have in studio with us tonight.
Well, today we're glad to have in our studio up-and-coming professional fighter Roy Tapia. Roy, he is currently 2-0 with one knockout. Also in studio, his advisor, old friend of mine, Cesar Garcia. How's it going, Cesar?
How's it going?
We also got up-and-coming amateur MMA fighter Jose Huerta in studio. How's it going, Jose?
How's it going?
Cheddar. Right?
Yeah.
Now, it was weird because this originally we were planning on talking to Este Roy about your upcoming fight, but as it turns out, it fell through. What happened?
Well, right after my last fight on the second, they offered me the fight at the weigh-in, and I told them that I was gonna be ready. And maybe about 2 days after I fought, I got really sick, and I have asthma too, so when I get the cold and stuff, it hits me a lot. It hits me really hard, and this time, I mean, it hasn't hit me like that for a really good while, and I was just basically, like, just really sick, and I wasn't able to train for about a week and a half after I fought. So, I mean, it wasn't the right time. I should have been in the gym. You know, if I was going to fight on the 30th, I should have been in the gym right after, and I wasn't able to. So, you know, we had to let the matchmaker know that it wasn't going to be able to happen on the 30th.
I mean, that was a quick turnaround of your last fight. December 2nd, 2011, against Jose Garcia. That was over at the Chumash Casino in San Ynez, California. You got a 4-round unanimous decision. At that time, you just figured, okay, we'll take this fight on the 30th.
Yeah.
Because that fight at Morongo Casino, right?
Yeah, at the Morongo. I think it's going to be a Jermaine Taylor
against Jesse Nicklau right there. It's going to be televised on Showbox.
Yeah. When I went to go fight, I mean, I wasn't gonna take the fight. I didn't think I was gonna get sick. If I didn't get sick, you know, after the fight, I would have been fighting, you know, on the 30th. But you know, stuff happens, and it's just better to fight at 100% instead of being, you know, 80% fighting. So.
Definitely.
Right. How long was your training camp for this one?
For this one, it was about. I didn't really stop training at all since I debuted on September 30. And I took maybe 2 days off, and I kept training since then really hard, and never stopped. So
you cut in any weight for your fight?
When you're not really trying to cut your weight, you know, your body walks around a little bit heavier. So yeah, I cut about 11 pounds.
Oh, okay, so not too bad.
I go up about that much. So
then, what's your weight division?
My weight division is super bantamweight, 123. Well, my last fight was at 123, super bantamweight, and my first one was at featherweight at 126. But I'll be going down eventually, probably down to bantamweight, 118.
Wow.
Can you make bantam?
Yeah, I can make
it. I mean, when you fought Edgar Flores, your debut, you came in at 26. Next fight after that, 23, right?
23, yeah.
Yeah, what a difference. Even, you know, in those weight divisions, look at it at MMA. I mean, we got the lightest out there is, like 125 or something, like flyweight.
Yeah.
I think with anything, the smaller guys are always a lot quicker. As soon as you get the bigger dude, they tend to slow it down.
Well, definitely more exciting fights, yeah. You know, you see with the lighter weight classes.
But, hey, I know that since we're on the radio and stuff, I know we got Cesar and Jose, and I was trying to figure out at least what you're, like, how you know these guys and what you do, Cesar.
Well, mainly, I know Roy. I met him through my former trainer. I took some pro fights, and my trainer, who's a scout, I would say a boxing scout, had referred me Roy, and pretty much told me do my best to take care of Roy, set him up, and that's pretty much, you know, I'm now his advisor.
Okay.
So it was kind of like I'm trial by fire, really. I guess I'm learning as I go. And Jose, I actually started training with Jose and, you know, letting him punch me and I'm punching him around. And, you know, now we're good friends and still kept, you know, trying to get his game, his boxing game better and get up there, you know. Once he turns pro, he's going to at least be able to punch a little bit, you know.
So pretty much like kind of like a mentor, right? Because, I mean, you've already, I mean, essentially paid your dues in a ring and it's... I mean, it's trying to get the young guys up and coming.
Mentors make me feel kind of old, you know?
That's
but
all right,
yeah, I guess that's what it is, a mentor.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool.
No, also, why don't you tell us about, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, how you were saying, you know, you're looking for a stable of Mexican fighters and you're looking to expand.
Yeah, I'd like to, one thing that I've always had in mind is to help the MMA game grow among Mexican people and don't... I know that the way that's going to happen is if we have successful Mexican fighters, and preferably it would be Mexican-born. The next best thing would be the you know, American-born to Mexican parents, guys like Jose here who speak perfect Spanish, perfect English. And once we can get them to start doing good and being successful fighters, then I think the game will grow amongst the Latino crowd or the Mexican crowd or the fan base that everybody is out there kind of chasing, you know.
Right. And what do you feel, what is your opinion of the people that are currently representing, you know, like the UFC and stuff as far as, you know, Mexican-American fighters or Mexican fighters?
The fighters themselves?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the guys that are representing now, they're great fighters. I mean, you got guys like Diego Sanchez, you know, the heavyweight, or what's his name?
Kane
Velasquez. Yeah, those guys... I mean, they're great fighters, you know.
His Spanish is not that great, man.
Exactly. I think that makes a difference. I think it makes a difference.
Let me ask you something. Don't you think that this market, I mean, it's primarily, let's say, Mexico's market, that's probably the hardest market to cater to in MMA because of how well established their dominance in boxing is?
I don't think it has anything to do with that boxing is such an established game. I think it's more that there hasn't been that fighter to cross over into the Mexican market and really catch their eye. You know, I don't think that guy's there yet. You know, Mexican people, if you don't do good, they'll be like, you know, pa la otra, or maybe the next guy will step up. But if he's not winning, then, you know, it's going to be hard for them to pay attention.
I think, just to debate that, I think what happens is MMA is a lot of wrestling based, and you don't have a lot of Mexican wrestlers per se, right? Unless you grew up in Iowa or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
I don't think they get the wrestling aspect of it. But I had an uncle in Mexico who was a wrestler, you know, with the mask. El Cancerbero was his name. And as soon as I showed him MMA, this was years ago, he got it instantly. You know, he knew this body control, but because of his base as a wrestler or lucha libre guy, you know. So maybe if they used that as an angle to get in, it might work.
Yeah, because I know there's a big push to get, like, you know, at least Brazilian jiu-jitsu out throughout Mexico and stuff. Because I got a buddy, you know, Jose, who's always telling me, come out there, open up a place, because they're all hungry for it. But, I mean, the base out there is different from here, obviously, because boxing is the big staple out there, right?
It is growing, though. It's growing. I was out there once at Entram. You guys mentioned Entram and TJ.
Yeah.
I was out there with Uriah Faber, and Uriah was telling me how surprised he was at how good the grappling was. You know, so once he said that, then I knew it was getting to the point where, you know, when one day one of these kids is going to step up and get into the big leagues, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely some evolution going on there, you know, as far as the sport growing in Mexico. You know, a lot of them are starting to embrace Muay Thai as well.
Yeah, I have a little cousin who's a Muay Thai champion out in Mexico.
Yeah, I have a friend too. He was here training in LA, and he moved out there to Manzanillo, and now he has his own gym. And even going to, you know, Puerto Vallarta on vacation. Muay Thai fights and stuff and things that you weren't used to seeing, you know, being not Italian and stuff.
Right. But I think the Mexican crowd now, like guys like my parents, you know, my dad, that are mostly Spanish speaking, are starting to understand the ground aspect of it. At least know that it's not just two guys on top of each other now. They know that there's stuff going on. So I think they're starting to understand it. And then once that happens, it keeps happening, then these guys will start to stand out as fighters, you know?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think we're also just, I don't know, getting ready to get Ed on the phone. So maybe when he gets on,
okay,
you can get him introduced. But both Jose and Roy, you guys are all and yourself train out at the same place.
Right. Well, Roy trains at Maywood Boxing.
Okay. Sure.
And Jose trains, or Cheddar trains, at Black House.
Okay.
And Cheddar, tell us about your background.
Well, I'm 5-5. I'm 5-5 in amateur, as an amateur. My first couple of fights, you know, they were kind of slack in the ground. And I was more like a striker and a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And I was really getting into the ground game, you know, like jiu-jitsu. But as soon as my second fight came in, you know, I started, like, you know, getting the game. And now I'm, like, really good at defending the submission. So, you know, I'm doing really good. My submissions defense, really good. And now my boxing is really solid. Like, it's getting better. Thanks to Caesar taking me to Maywood. You know, it's one of the best boxing gyms right here in Southern so far, you know, for Mexicans. And I've been getting close with Rory, and they've just been teaching me my hands, how to move them better, how to jab better, how to throw my combinations, you know, just you know, be more slick with my punches. Okay. You know?
Okay, so then really was like your background was really striking first time.
Yeah. But I wrestled in high school too for 4 years, so.
Oh, okay. Right on. And it looks like we have another person that's with your team is joining us on the show. We got him on the line here.
Hello, Ed?
Hello.
Hello. Okay, this is Ed Suarez, manager from Black House MMA. Ed, you're on Mad Time Radio.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, good, good. Glad to have you here. Ed,
right on.
Ed, quick question. Now, I know you've established yourself as a manager in MMA with the likes of Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, the Nogueira brothers. Let me ask you, why boxing now?
You know what? I just think, give me 1 second, man. I'm actually at Universal Studios with my daughter, and I'm trying to get out of this. Eric, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. We can hear you fine.
Hey, you sound great.
Okay. Why boxing? I just, you know, I've always been a fan of boxing, and traditionally, you know, the way that we manage our fighters in MMA was working very well in MMA, and we wanted to test it out in boxing and kind of bring over our philosophy that we had in MMA and try to apply it in boxing and see how it works.
Now let me ask you this, why Roy?
Why Roy? Well, actually the way that Roy came about was through Cesar Garcia, who's kind of, you know, I've known Cesar for a long time, and Cesar was telling me about Roy, and we met Roy, and we really liked his just his whole attitude. I mean, one of the things about the guys that we manage, you know, not only are they great boxers or great fighters, but they're great people. And, you know, when I met Roy, I saw this kid as, you know, a young talent and seemed like a great guy. And that's the type of people that we want to work with.
Yeah. Now, just for people that don't know, can you just give us a little bit background on yourself and how you got started in the business?
I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, as far as background and how I started in the MMA business,
yeah.
Or just
Black House in general.
Well, I mean, you know, my background. I mean, I started my first real thing. My first real success was I was a nightclub promoter, and I managed bands. And then from that, I went on to the apparel business, and I did that for a long time. And through the apparel business, I kind of got tied into the mixed martial arts, as always being a fan, and just with my experience of managing bands and my experience in the apparel industry and managing, you know, different things like that, it just kind of crossed over into the fight world.
Now, how were you able? I mean, you got a lot of big name guys under your, you know, under your banner. How were you able to get those guys on board, though? Just from all the connections you've made over the years.
The relationship, it's actually my business partner. I have a business partner named George, George Guimaraunge, and he's been in the mixed martial arts world for a long, long time, and he had a lot of credibility, and when we joined forces, it just made a very powerful team, so it just ended up working out that way.
I know when Cesar and Roy came in, I know there's a YouTube video you guys is pretty good that's got, talks about Black House MMA, and I think Roy's in there at Maywood Boxing Club. It's a pretty good video. If anyone hasn't seen it, then go on YouTube and check it out. But it's got some good information on you and the whole, you know, your whole Black House deal over there. So it's kind of cool.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, Roy's a young kid. And, you know, I think the boxing world is changing a lot. The boxing business is changing a lot. And I just think that we bring like a new flavor to the boxing world, and And, you know, we're really looking forward to seeing how our philosophy applies to boxing. But so far, so good. You know, he was Showtime right now. He's 2-0. And we have, really high hopes for him.
Yeah, now, speaking of Showtime, we know that he had this, that his fight fell through on Saturday's Showbox card out in Morongo. Is that right?
I'm sorry? I can hear you.
This Friday's fight at Morongo fell through?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, this upcoming Friday, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's probably something that you guys are pretty used to happening, I guess, fights falling through sometimes.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, you know, with different boxing, I mean, in MMA, it happens a lot. Like I said, you know, with boxing, you know, we're just really getting our feet wet with the boxing in the boxing world. But I feel it's pretty, I know the only difference between, like, boxing when they're big boxing matches, you know, most of the time if someone gets hurt or someone pulls out, typically the fight is canceled. Unlike with MMA, you know, they'll just find a replacement, which is, they've always, you know, they base it around the events more than they base it around the fighters.
Okay.
Now, one more question, Ed. I know Ramon Morales, Yuquita Morales is currently training Roy. What are your thoughts on him as a trainer for Roy?
Well, I mean, you know, and that particular point of view, I mean, he seems to be a very knowledgeable trainer. I mean, look how well he's prepared Roy. And I think it really has to revolve around the relationship the fighter has with the trainer. And from what it seems like, they have a very good relationship. And, you know, every fighter and has a different opinion on different trainers and stuff. So I think it's very important that the trainer and the fighter get along and have a good working relationship together. And I think he's a great trainer. I mean, look at the way Roy performs inside the ring.
Yes, definitely. Well, Ed, we'd like to thank you for having on your show and wish you and Roy the best of luck.
Thank you very much, man.
Hey, Ed, before you go, I know you're out there with your daughter, Universal Studios, but you want to let people know where they can look up your gym, or if they got any, you know, if they want to find out where you guys are training at. Is that something they can look up on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you can find out information on our gym by going to blackhousemma.com.
Okay, excellent.
All right, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, hey, appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, man. Thank you.
All right, that was Ed Suarez, guys. Thanks, Caesar and the crew hooking that call up. So,
yeah, no worries.
Nice guy, right?
Yeah.
Taking time out of his schedule to call on.
You know, one thing about Ed is he's real down to earth, like a regular, you know, regular dude from around here. So
for being a prominent MMA manager, yeah.
Yeah, real nice guy, definitely. Wow. I think a lot of his guys, a lot of his fighters, I mean, they rely on him so much that they like him a lot because of the type of person he is. You would never think that he's a top manager. He's just a regular guy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, we just got like a brief background on him, but obviously, you know, he's worked his way up to where he's at, so he's come up through the ranks. So, you know, I mean, he's probably dealt with tons of people and he knows how it feels to get shafted. So he's probably just a stand-up dude, you know?
Yeah. Well, business. He's a businessman. Yeah. He knows how business works in general. Yeah.
But he's, you know, give you good compliments, so.
Yeah.
Boy, you got a lot of work, Roy.
Yeah. You're still not back. Over it, huh?
You got that guy backing you, man, so that's good. That's excellent. We just got to get Stack Cheddar over there on board.
Cheddar's going to be the guy that's going to usher the MMA to the Mexican crowd, hopefully.
Okay, now I have to ask, dude, how the nickname Cheddar come about?
It was back in high school, my first year and freshman year in wrestling. There's some guy they call him Cheese, you know?
Oh, we got one of those, too.
So, yeah, we had one of those. Yeah.
So we were wrestling one time, and he was coming in eating a cheeseburger. And it was like, every wrestling practice comes in eating a cheeseburger. I was like, dude, what do you eat a cheeseburger for? I was like, because I love cheeseburgers, you know? It was McDonald's, too. I was like, you're going to eat cheese, like, what kind of cheese is that? I tell him, you know, go to Subway. You know, I eat Subway all the time, and I love the cheese, but it's better than McDonald's cheese, you know? I was like, what kind of cheese you get? I go, I love cheddar, you know? It's the white cheddar. I was like, all right, cheddar. I was like, what you call me cheddar for? I was like, that's your name, cheddar, you know? You like cheddar, then. your nickname is going to be Cheddar. I was like, all right, man. Ever since then, wrestling, we started wrestling, and it's Cheddar, 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 you know?
What's
like,
funny is he has a younger brother, and we call him Cheez-It, and that's his nickname.
He wrestles too. My younger brother, yeah. He actually, me and him are really close, and he looks up to me, and we're really close, and he wrestles too, you know? We take him to the fights. Like, I just had my last fight at the Bonaventure, and I took him with me, and I'm really close to him, and I just look out for him and everything, you know? Like, I take him everywhere. We take him to the fights. We take him to my fights. We take him to Roy's. Like, you know, I just want him to, you know? Like, if he doesn't do MMA, I just want him to do the good things, you know?
Yeah.
Not follow the bad things, so. Yeah.
And, Cheddar, what's your weight class? What are you fighting
at? Bantamweight, 135.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right on. That very exciting division, and now, you know, there's a lot more opportunities, especially for the lighter weights. It looks like now in the UFC... and everything now that they acquired WEC. And so, you know, let's see. There's a, you know, there's a big stage for you out there.
What about Roy? You don't got no nickname, buddy?
Yeah, man. It's The Pit. Roy The Pit Tapia.
Why?
Because
you're from East LA?
Yeah.
You can wear a chain around your neck?
Nah.
All rampy stuff?
Nah. No, I don't know. We were kind of going over nicknames, and we kind of wanted the Pit Bull, but then I didn't really want the Pit Bull, and I don't know. It just somebody mentioned a friend of mine named Albert Vasquez. Yeah, he told me, he was, what about the Pit? You know, people always talk, you know, when they ask you what kind of dog you got, you know, you don't say you got a Pit Bull, you say I got a Pit. I'm like, all right, that's cool. That sounds good.
Oh, so you're not going to go like Alfredo Angulo, right? Start walking into the ring with dogs all of a sudden?
I don't know. It's an idea I had, but I don't know.
Dude, because I got so fed up having those mutts at the gym, dude. Dude, ooh. I swore, dude, I'd walk by, I'd kick one of them, dude.
What's funny is that I asked the matchmaker once, you know, what's the possibility of us being able to bring dogs? And he shot that idea down so fast, he put me in my place.
Oh, no. Dude, next time walk in there with those little blue blocker glasses, dude.
Yeah, right.
Just say you need them.
No, dude. With Angulo, it would be bad, dude. I mean, he'd walk in, and sure enough, these guys from the kennel that was sponsoring him would walk in
Atomic
with...
Atomic Dogs, I think it was.
I don't know who it was, but they'd walk in with two, and it'd be those... it was those American bullies. The they bulldog, weren't pits, yeah. So they look mean, but they're not, dude. But they do their dirty work on your gym bag, dude, you don't appreciate it.
That's nasty, dude.
Dude, really, dude?
Yeah,
those guys, some of these perros walk around, kick one of those things.
Yeah, no, the only pit we'll be bringing in would be this one.
That's yeah. Yeah. Hey, dude, you can't be walking around kicking dogs, man. Dude, there's like people go to jail for that stuff.
You better apologize to PETA.
Yeah, dude, real quick, man. Not gonna happen. Right? There'll be some dog lovers waiting for you outside here.
Damn dog relieved himself on my gym bag, dude. He deserves a kick. Dude, I'm sorry.
What about you, Caesar? What was your nickname?
Little Thunder.
Oh, man, that ain't right, dude.
The same guy, Albert, the same guy that put his nickname, gave me the Little Thunder nickname. He says, because I would just fight kind of like Arturo Gatti, just kind of like disregard for my own face.
Yeah.
Just going at it. So he said, you're like Little Thunder, you know, so Little Thunder. So I kind of liked it, you know.
Yeah.
Arturo Gatti was one of my favorite fighters, you know, the guy always brought it. So
yeah.
Kind of like me, I think.
Yeah.
I think, at least, in my own book, in my own eyes.
I'll keep the nickname the Pit up until I get the respect, you know. To when I really want is for when I get announced to announce me, you know, the Pride of East Los Angeles. But you know, that's gonna come with winning fights, you know, eventually with time, you know. So hopefully, soon enough, I'll be able to, you know, have that, you know, that respect where I'll be announced like that. Cause that's what I really want to be.
Isn't there somebody already called that? Didn't they call someone else that? The Pride of East Los Angeles?
The Golden
Boy.
Dude,
but
he's old news. This guy is way longer.
Dude, just don't walk around with stockings, dude.
Yeah,
you're in trouble, bro.
Any guy, you know, any guy in women's panties, dude. I mean, you can't be the Pride of East LA.
Hey, I want you to tell him that in his face.
Huh.
Bring me in the studio, dude. I'll tell him.
All right. I'm gonna shine that glass, please.
You know, yeah. he can put those thigh highs on. I still think he can hit you just as hard, though. No matter what he's wearing.
How about the gatekeeper of East Los Angeles?
Nah. Dude, in boxing, you never want to be a gatekeeper.
Yeah, my bad.
Gatekeepers, guys that never really made it to that top level.
Oh, my bad. Strike that
or the former world champion who's just the guy you got to beat now to get into to crack the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. We don't want to be gatekeepers.
No,
not at all. Not now, at least, you know.
All right, yeah. I'm just trying to think of what else is in East LA besides tacos and tortas.
But Don't forget tamales.
Oh, tamales, yeah. Tons of masa.
Stop it. What?
Somebody's hungry.
Stop it.
We'll take a quick break?
Yeah, we should take a quick break, and we're going to be back with some more Mad Time Radio.
Pretty soon.
Actually, we do have another guest joining us in the studio. A good friend of ours, Rodrigo Tovar.
Hi, guys.
Or should I say Rodrigo Toho Tovar?
Yeah, that works too.
Yeah.
Sorry about my voice. It's just I have like a cold right now.
Yeah, it's going around. It's going around all of us.
Yeah.
So we know that you've had a lot of projects go on over the years, and you know, in your time with Tap Out and other projects. Why don't we start from the beginning in you know, your design work and how you started with Tap Out?
Basically, I started back in 2001. I met Charles at WFA. That was that John Lewis promotion,
mm-hmm.
And I just hit him up. I asked him like if he needed any work. So that's how it got started. He gave me a call maybe 2 months later after that, and we met at a McDonald's in Cerritos,
mm-hmm.
And you know, we just hit it off, and from there on I just started doing freelance for him.
And at what stage of the game do you remember Tap Out being at? I mean, was it I can't remember, but I mean, was it really, really big, you know, with DFC already established, or were they still coming up?
It was still coming up. they were really small at the time. I mean, someone just asked me recently, like, well, how much were you making back in, mm-hmm. you know, 2001 when I first started? I was making maybe $600 a year.
Oh, wow.
Know? I mean,
so it was really more like kind of an internship in a way.
Yeah,
huh?
You know, and it's like I said, I always thought Tap Out was going to be big. I didn't know if I could stick with the company long enough to see it get big,
mm-hmm.
but I knew that because I saw MMA as getting huge.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like it was waiting to explode. It's just a lot of people were scared to touch it because, you know, really because of, I think, like, you know, politicians or whatever the reason.
Right.
But, yeah, I knew it was going to be big, and I wanted to stick with the brand, but at that time I had to take a bunch of different jobs. I took a bunch of shitty jobs that I hated, but I had to, you know, make ends meet somehow.
Right.
Well, $600 a year is not covering much, not even gas back then when it was cheap.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, there was no money. And it wasn't until, I think, 2005 or 2006 that he told me, hey, you know, we're actually starting to, like, pick up now, you know. So I believe it was 2006. So I come and go work at the warehouse. And at that time, I mean, I still wasn't going to make a lot of money. I lived in L.A. I still live in L.A. But he's all, come and work. The warehouse was in San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. It was a Grand Terrace. So I had to commute 50 miles one way, and my pay was $14 an hour. So even then, I wasn't making a whole lot of money. But I felt like, okay, it's growing. This is what I believe in. So I quit the job that I had here, which was at a printing company, and I was making the same amount of money, but I felt this is what I want to do.
Did you feel like you had more, like, obviously you're an artist, but you had more artistic, creative control driving out there and doing what they were doing as opposed to being at a print shop?
Yeah. Because what I was doing before, I was basically printing, like, flyers and stuff. And my job consisted of cropping and checking the resolution of a file, which is,
right,
it's boring.
Like data entry?
Yeah,
work. It's not really
pretty much.
And, a reflection of what you're doing.
And even then, once I started there, I was working 4 hours doing stocking. While I was helping out in the warehouse, I was putting people's orders together. And the other 4 hours I would spend doing graphics. I mean, that's how small it still was. And it was really a handful of people in there. There wasn't a whole lot of people. It was like maybe on a really busy day, there was maybe 7 people. And usually it was 5. Sometimes it was 2. On the weekends, I'd go on the Sunday. And it was just 2 of us sometimes putting orders together. So,
oh, wow. So yeah, you were there just seeing really when it was growing, huh? And how did it come about that you got to do the artwork for the Ultimate Fighter houses? Were there other artists that they were considering as well, or
no,
did it come straight to you for it?
That's another thing that, you know, I also got that gig because of Charles. I mean, he was a good friend, and he helped my career out. So that's why I'm really appreciate everything that he did for me.
Mm-hmm.
They basically contracted him to do the interior design of the houses, so like pick the colors, pick the furniture. And he told him, I'll do this, but if you want me to do this, I need to bring in my artist. So I want, you know, murals painted here and there, whatever. So he hits me up and he's like, hey, I want you to you know, this is what they want me to do. I told him I'd do it, but I want you to paint the walls. I said, okay. And then I was thinking to myself, I've drawn my whole life. I've painted it in a piece of paper. But I've never done murals. I've never spray painted. So this is new to me. But I'm thinking like, well, screw it. You know, if I screw this wall up, you know, oh, well, you know. But I might as well take a chance because, I mean, this is a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's how that started.
And how many seasons did you get to do for them?
I believe it was 5 through 11. Season 5 through season 11.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if anyone remembers, you know, all that artwork he saw, you know, Ultimate Fighter, that was, you know, his artwork that he was doing there for the shows.
So how do you like spray painting the walls, Chaka? Is it different though? I mean, it's got to be different because you're blowing everything up so big, right? You got to take a step back a lot and take a look at it.
Oh yeah, definitely kills the legs.
You wearing a mask, dude? Because I've seen a video of you and you weren't wearing a mask, man.
You know, sometimes you forget. Yeah. No, I've learned to wear a mask, wear gloves. Yeah, because it takes a toll on your body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
like your first mural, like how was it? Was it nerve wracking? Were you just like, man, I got to do this over? Did you have to?
It actually wasn't too bad.
No.
The thing about the Ultimate Fighter, I'd go in there and they'd want like so many pieces of artwork that I had to crank stuff out real quick, and it kind of sucks because you can't put your best work when you have so many. Drawings you have to, or paintings you have to do within. I was there anywhere between a week and the longest I've been there was a whole month. So I was basically living in Vegas.
But, just to paint?
Yeah.
Wow.
And how did it come about for training? Were you able to get to train as well while you were out there?
No. I p- push-ups and dips inside my...
Oh, so I mean, you weren't able to get, you know, go visit anyone gym or do any grappling or anything?
No, because my head's not in it. It's, there's nothing more that I like to do than, you know, get some jiu-jitsu training in or something. But at the same time, I'm there to work, and I want my work there to be the best work or the best work I could possibly do. That's my main goal. Mm-hmm. So if I could spend an extra hour, an extra minute making that painting look good, that's what I want to do. Because, I mean, that's what people are going to see. So I know I could always train when I get back, and that's why I just never really trained when I'm up there.
Is that now? When you have to do that, like obviously you probably like art your whole life, but when you got to sit there and you got to think about redoing a painting or doing this line or that line, does it take the fun out of it at some point when you're there for a whole month? You know, that's all you can do is paint.
Really, what? I mean, that doesn't bother me, but like I said, spray
just
painting.
Really, just the timelines, really?
Yeah, like, I would like to, you know, have a little bit more time on stuff and actually enjoy it. Where, like, this last job I did right now, I had about a week, and it's cool. I enjoyed it. I love everything about it, but it takes you out, really. I mean, it's pretty physical. Spray painting is physical.
Yeah, but do you get... Do you have artistic control what you're doing, or you have somebody saying, hey, listen, I want you to draw me a spider with a machine gun?
I kind of meet in the middle.
Oh, you do?
You know, the great thing is people like the style that I do. So they already know, you know, it's not like they're telling me, paint a Mona Lisa or something that, you know, it's along the lines of something that I'm already painting.
Yeah.
And for those that haven't seen your artwork, can you describe your style of artwork that you've been doing?
I don't know. I guess if you looked at a comic book or something, that's similar. It's cartoony. I think it's cartoony. I don't know. I mean, people describe it as dark. Or,
yeah, but, definitely dark.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's, I guess, art's subjective.
Yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh. It's probably different looking at it because I know when Tap Out was coming up, I think there was what was that other group? It was like NHB, right? Where they had like that baseball logo.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to them?
That's Full Contact Fighter, right? Excuse me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Contact. Oh, it is?
Yeah, Full Contact Fighter.
Oh, okay, yeah. They had the baseball logo thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember them. Yeah. That was Rich Franklin was like one of their guys that they were sponsoring. He used to wear.
No, I thought it was that dude Joe Riggs or something because he had a big old tattoo.
Oh, because he had the NHB tatted on his arm?
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. No, like Full Contact Fighter, I think like back in the day they had like Matt Hughes and Rich Franklin. And there's a few people that that wore it back in the day when it was okay to still wear a Tap Out shirt.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, man? I mean,
I know the commercialization of Tap Out,
yeah.
Where you can buy it at Walmart now, or you know, it's your local store.
Because they added that little logo on there too. The company that bought it, right?
Yeah, that's ABG bought it.
Yeah. Oh, is that who bought it?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know they got a certain little, like you look at the shirt, it's got a little logo on the bottom.
Yeah, Tap Out All Star or something.
Yeah.
Something
really?
Like
yeah. You haven't seen that?
To be honest, I don't even know what they're doing here in the States.
Oh,
okay. I haven't walked into a Walmart or a Spencer's in a really long time. So
where have you been, dude?
You're not missing much.
It's some good people to go look at Walmart.
Yeah,
man.
Well, if you're
well,
not
that's
for
exactly
people watching.
Why I don't go. I've been there one time and I was like, what the fuck?
Dude, well, you can buy like anything you want in there, dude. It's okay. You need a car battery. You need Band-Aids. You know, like you can buy anything you want at Walmart.
Yeah, they do have a lot of stuff, but I even saw that they have vegetables and
yeah.
It's a grocery store now.
Yeah, you can go in there and buy. How about that lady was cooking meth in Walmart?
Really?
Yeah, you didn't hear about that?
No,
I'm not even lying, dude. I'm not lying.
Yeah,
there's so much stuff in Walmart that she was cooking meth in Walmart.
Yeah, she went and got
a gallon jug of milk and dumped it. Was like mixing her stuff in there, walking around. And then the surveillance are like, she's been here like 3-4 hours, dude. Like she's cooking meth. There's so much junk in Walmart. She's probably over there taking the Sudafed and mixing it with some battery acid.
Yeah,
dude.
No, dude, I'm gonna have to Google that.
Hey, people at Walmart, man, comic relief.
No, dude, but like she's cooking meth in Walmart. That's how you know there's too much stuff in there.
Yeah.
So,
I mean the brand's definitely popular. It's very, I guess, generic. I don't know. It's different everywhere.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of one of those things that went the way of Affliction, where you know it went to from like you know people in the know to like you know everybody now and stuff. And I guess it's good for a company, you know, that it's out there to make money. But from an artistic standpoint, it really, I guess, dilutes it, you know?
Well, the problem that I see here in the States, because what people don't, maybe some people don't know, is that it's a licensing model. So basically, the main company that owns it is called ABG, and they license it out to a company in the U.S. So the company in the U.S. gives them X amount of millions, and then they could do whatever they want with it.
Right.
So all the different companies are doing different things. And in the States, it's all about the buck from what I've seen. But like, for example, Canada, they understand the brand, and it's totally different in Canada. It's actually pretty cool to go over there and see what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. Where here, it's just they don't care about the art, they don't care about the direction. It's a mess, you know.
Yeah, because I know sometimes you see some of the fighters wearing some stuff. I like, that's a pretty cool logo, but you never see that stuff here. It's like you said, you go to like a Sears or a Walmart and you just see.
Yeah, you see the generic stuff. Yeah. It's just like a stencil and not much else. And
I just wait till they're at Ross because I get 2-for-1.
Yeah, and a one more round T-shirt too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, what happened to that?
They're at Ross, man.
Really?
Yeah.
That was Matt Hughes' brand.
One more round. They actually, their T-shirts were pretty pricey when they first came out.
Not at Walmart.
Well, I guess I mean,
because it's not selling.
I think they wanted to go the way of Affliction. You know, same thing too. You know, $50 T-shirts and stuff. And it's like, come on. You know.
Well, what happened with Affliction?
Yeah, same thing. You
really?
Know?
Yeah,
you could find them at Ross too.
Well, Affliction got into problems with the UFC, obviously, because they had, you know, they were trying to start their own fight promotion, and I guess they came to terms with Dana, so now they're back to being a clothing company, because Dana wasn't allowing any fighters to wear Affliction shirts, which I think caused a lot of problems, because obviously those guys were making money, you know, getting sponsored by Affliction. But now they're back to doing shirts.
Yeah.
No, but tell me that Affliction gi that GSP came out to once wasn't pretty awesome, wasn't it? Remember that he came out? It was like all embroidered up and everything. He had like, it looked like an Affliction gi.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty badass.
So douchebag gold and stuff, you know?
Diamonds.
All glitter. All bedazzled.
No, actually, everyone I was like, wow, that's a badass.
Bedazzled.
Yeah, is that what they use, like gold cards?
I don't know, man. It's like, but.
And now.
Cairo. Cairo Parisian.
Yeah. Oh, Cairo.
Yeah. That's all they wear.
I hope he's not listening, dude.
I'm gonna get judo tossed.
That's about it, though. But you know, you just pull him in your guard and handle him.
Yeah. Well, isn't he good on the ground?
I don't know, man.
He trained the Gokor. I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah.
He's got sick jujitsu for sure. I mean, sick judo. Yeah. I mean, he's throwing people left and right.
Yeah.
So sometimes you gotta wonder because he can't even get a mouthpiece that fits in his mouth. Seriously, I mean, like, anyone lost a tooth.
That? They don't remember that where he got that tooth knocked out?
Oh, yeah. Who did he fight? Was that Diego?
Diego.
That was a good fight.
Yeah, it's like, well, what did he put? I think he put his mouth guard upside down or something.
I think they had to get his mouth guard, and they had to pull his tooth out of the mouth guard.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And then besides the one that flew out of his mouth.
Besides that
Two teeth
were knocked out?
Yeah.
Yeah,
with a knee.
With a knee.
Yeah, with a knee. But that's hardcore, man. When you see him like, okay, let me grab the pink size real quick and pull out of my tooth. And then
he played it like 3 or 4 times on the TV.
Parisian and Diego Sanchez, right?
Yeah, you just see the tooth.
Yeah. But you know, the funny thing is, like, the dude didn't even care. You know what I mean? No. It's like,
I guess that's the adrenaline, huh?
What was the name? Dude, one of the older UFCs.
Oh, you're talking about the first ones, I bet.
There was a... Man, it's on their Ultimate Knockouts, too, man. It's
Is that the guy that had, like, one boxing glove and one, like, in one hand?
No, not that old. It was a fight in Japan, man. I can't remember the UFC fighter's name, Eugene something, but he knocked the Japanese fighter's tooth out. Guy stops, removes his mouthpiece, spits his tooth out, then throws the mouthpiece away.
Was it Eugene Jackson?
That's who it is. Eugene Jackson. He's knocking out this Japanese cat, but he knocks the dude's tooth out, and the guy's got his mouthpiece, and he like stops, takes a step back. Spits it out, throws the mouthpiece away, dude, and gets back into the fight. Promptly gets knocked out by Jackson. But yeah, it was Eugene Jackson.
Only in Japan.
It was in Japan.
Only in Japan.
Was it Pride by any chance?
No. It was one of the first. UFC, it was one of the first. Japan? Ultimate Japan.
Okay. Yeah.
Ultimate Japan. Because I have it on one of those UFC Ultimate Knockout DVDs. It's in there.
Well, it's exciting. UFC is going to be back in Japan in February.
Oh, really? Who's on the card?
I haven't looked it up yet, but I know that they're actually Rogan was talking about it, but they're going to be there in February. He's all worried about getting, like, radiation and stuff. Like, flipping out about the radiation.
That's funny.
You know? So now that, you know, you're not with Tap Out anymore, what's the new project, Painted Demons? Tell us about that and how that came about.
During the time that Tap Out was going to sell, I just figured, well, I need to start doing something on the side. So I like to develop it into a brand and, basically develop a brand, but for a long time I just really didn't know what I wanted to do with it. Mm-hmm. But it seems like a lot of people still are asking for the MMA stuff, which I try to kind of get away from, but mm-hmm. all my clients want MMA stuff. So,
is it a collaboration? Or
but what's MMA stuff? Like, what? I mean, what is that?
Like shirts? Or
like a fist?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, really, it's open, but it's like they want to attach, this is an MMA lifestyle brand to it. You know, really, if you look at all these different brands, they're all the same. It's all the same crap, in my opinion. Different quality of art, but it's all the same.
Anyone's out there you do like?
Honestly, I haven't bought a shirt in a long time. Some of the Tap Out stuff's cool. Everyone has their one or two shirts that looks good.
Yeah.
I don't look at one of these brands as a whole and say, this brand is good. I'll see a shirt from this brand that I like. I'll see a shirt from that brand that I like,
Just like music,
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
really, that's what it is.
You don't buy an album like every song on the album. It's really rare. You find a couple things you like Now, is it a collaboration or is it just you doing all the artwork for Painted Demons right now?
It's just me. I mean, I'd like to develop it kind of like into an artist brand, kind of mm-hmm. like, Obey or whatever. But, it may have a little different spin to it.
And would that include some of the work you had at that show a while back?
Yeah, I'd like to include some of those pieces.
Yeah, that show was really impressive. That show you put on there that was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would really like to do another one just like that. It's just a matter of finding the venue, just the time and just getting everybody scheduled. But I did that show. I don't want to say by myself, but I'm the one that kind of put it together, mm-hmm. and it was a. That's one. I mean, I would like to focus on doing art, not
right.
putting a show together.
So
I mean, I guess that's
a lot
kind
of work,
like a,
huh?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and you're probably nerve wracking because you got to make sure everything's in place.
It was nerve wracking, and it almost fell through two or three times.
Well, there's a couple other artists that were with you.
And they were a big help. Mm-hmm. But as far as putting like the event together, like that was me, and it was a pain in the ass.
Well, hey, really quick, by the way, that UFC, it's 144 in Japan. The main card is Edgar versus Ben Henderson.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and they got Jackson versus Bader, Hunt versus Congo, Akiyama versus Shields, Pettis versus
Loazon.
So, pretty stacked card.
It looks loaded.
Yeah, got a lot of Japanese guys on there. I wonder why.
Takanori Gomi.
Oh, it's in Japan. My bad. Hey, did you guys cover when you got started doing jiu-jitsu?
We didn't get into it. Actually, yeah, I know.
I'm just curious on when you guys got started, and we can ask like Roy and Caesar and so, because when they got started, you guys are all boxers. Well,
when did you start training?
I believe I was 16.
And was it that you just wanted to get in shape or
no,
you
I mean,
was the, athletic?
The way it started is, I've been into the UFC since it first came out. So I was small. I watched that. We're like, oh, this is cool. And then my brother was like, hey, let's start training. I'm like, okay. And back then, there wasn't really anything. Mm-hmm. So we would just watch UFCs, pause the video, draw the moves. And then we had some mats. And mm-hmm. so we put the mats out, and we just started beating the crap out of each other.
With liquor or without?
No, I wasn't drinking at this time.
Oh, come on, man.
I didn't start drinking until I was like
17.
Yeah, 17. Yeah, but that's how it started, and we kind of, that's why I started doing leg locks, because I kind of got a more or less a feel for them from watching UFC.
Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one fight that changed my life. I saw
him
Shamrock
Pat
come out.
Smith.
Yeah, I saw him, and I'm like, dude, that guy looks like a superhero. And I grew up reading comic books, so, this guy looks like a superhero. And then he does a move that I didn't even know existed. I thought that should only happen in the movies, a leg lock, who hears about. Now you...
It was a heel hook.
Yeah,
he broke his heel with it.
Yeah, and ever since then, I'm like, dude, I want to do stuff like that. But so that's how we kind of got, you know, we got all right. And then we actually, he signed us up. My brother signed me up at Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu. And this is way back in the day. At this time, they had Mark Kerr, Oleg Taktarov, wow. Marco Huas.
Boz Rutten was
there. Boz was there.
Marco Huas was there too?
Yeah.
Before his fight? Before he was in the UFC or after?
After.
Oh, okay.
Mark,
I remember that fight, dude. He fought that polar bear guy.
Paul Varlins, when he just kicked the leg down and chopped him down.
Was Mark Kerr clean back then, or was he all messed up?
He's ripped, so I'm sure he was taking something.
Oh, okay.
Just water.
Yeah, water.
The protein.
Yeah. So that's how it started. I trained there a couple months. Then I stopped training because I had no car at the time. And then once I turned, I think, 18, I had a car and was working, and I signed up with Rodrigo Mendaros. And that's how I started off with a new breed, basically.
You see those old pictures?
Was that La Habra?
Yeah, La Habra.
I think it was in Whittier?
No,
was
La Habra.
It was in La Habra. Okay. Yeah. How about you, Caesar? How long have you been training for?
Well, going to the gym, I used to train at a friend's house, Turtle, you probably.
Oh, yeah, Arturo Carrion.
Turtle from Entourage?
Yeah. No, not Turtle from Entourage. Arturo Carrion. Yeah, no, he had a gym in East LA.
Ring and everything, and I used to go there, you know, on and off. And then I started actually covering boxing. That's where I met Hector. And when I started covering boxing, I started meeting more and more people, and I started taking it more serious. And, you know, the next thing I know, they told me, you want to fight? And I said, sure, why not? Huh. And next thing you know, I had a pro record all of a sudden out of nowhere, really. And I dedicated some time to almost just that for a while I was being a realist. Well, the real estate market was booming, I was making a lot of money in like part-time real estate. So the rest of the time I started just boxing, and next thing you know, I just had pro record, you know.
Yeah,
not that good, but it was pro record.
Well, Turtle.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, man?
A lot of people mention Turtle. Yeah.
And it goes to say with Caesar.
Get it out, dude.
With Caesar, when he first stepped into the ring, a bunch of us bunch of boxing press people were like, "Whoa, Caesar's gonna fight." Then later on, we'd start seeing him, and like I'd run into him. I remember one time I ran into you at Joe Hernandez's gym on Vernon? Santa Fe in Vernon.
Vernon, right.
And keep in mind, dude, this gym, it's actually, they cut fabric in there. But in the back is this hellhole, dude. I mean, he'd have Daniel Ponce de Leon and Edwin Valero used to train there. And in there, when you go there, it's a fighter's gym. This is a place where they shut the doors, turn two heaters on, and you're sparring in this 10-by-10-foot ring.
And it'd be like 4.5-minute rounds.
And 4.5-minute rounds. This guy, one day I walk in, I see this guy going to war with former world champ.
Who's this guy?
Caesar.
Well, I'm just saying. Somebody listening, they're like, who are you talking about?
I know, remember, we're on the radio. We're not.
Gotcha. We're not
on TV. That's why I'm on the radio. I walk
in there and I see Caesar going to war with a former WBO 122-pound champion, Daniel Ponce de León. And I'm like, dude, this guy's serious. And it's one of the hardest things you could do, man. And I was like, wow, this guy was serious about it. So
it was just, for me, it was just like an honor just to be able to be in there with him, throwing punches with him, you know. And what's funny is that, what's the photographer?
German? Yeah, yes, senor.
He gave me a video of that, like a couple
of weeks sparring
later,
session.
And I looked at that sparring session, and I don't think I landed not one punch on Ponce. It was so funny. But that day, I thought I was actually doing good, you know what I mean? But it was a lot of fun. And that place was a hellhole, though. The ring was
10 by 10 foot.
It was,
dude,
like 90% of the room was the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 10% were like two bags that were on the sides. It was crazy. It was pretty crazy. But
how about you, Roy?
What's up?
How many years have you been training now?
Me, I've been training since I was about 7-8 years old.
What are you now, 12?
20. Yeah, so about 13 years now.
Oh, okay.
And I got started just, my dad basically forced me in it. I never really wanted to box when I was little. I remember him taking me to the gym, and I'd start crying. He'd try to make me work out, and I just wouldn't want to. And
That's right. I seen your YouTube video. That's right, dude. That's actually a pretty good video, by the way.
It is.
Whoever put it together, pretty good, man.
Mike Lee from the Black House.
Yeah, yeah. It's very informative. It's nice and stuff, and you know, I mean, shows that old. The only reason I think it's funny is that place where you guys boxing at, I used to have my Boy Scout troop in there.
At the old Maywood Community Center?
Yeah. Seriously, my boys got troops used to go there.
I've heard lots of stories about that place before it was a boxing gym, for sure. For sure.
It's crazy. So just a handful of years. How about Cheddar? What about you, buddy? Cheddar. I'm going to change your name.
Well, I started with wrestling. First, actually, I did a little bit of boxing, maybe a year. It used to be called the Youth Center in Bell Gardens, small little city. Bell Gardens, used to call it the Youth Center. Never heard Youth Center. And I went right there and I started training, you know, boxing. I did like one amateur boxing fight, whatever. And then after I stopped going. You know, I was hanging out with like, you know, kids playing pogs and canicas, you know.
Pogs and canicas, come on. Did you have the bad boy pong?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did?
You guys are bad.
Everyone. So as soon as I turned my freshman year in high school, you know, my older brother, Angel, he used to wrestle. You know, he was a pretty good wrestler. So he was a big guy. And I used to wrestle with him. He used to be a big guy. He used to wrestle, you know. So when I used to go wrestle with him, I was like, dude, watch. When I get better technique, I'm going to take you down. He was like, nah, you're never going to take me down because I'm bigger, you know. So I started wrestling. In my freshman year, I started wrestling. And I wrestled my freshman year. And then after that, after high school, I started wrestling all my 4 years. When I was done wrestling, I met, you know, who's Joe Camacho?
Yeah, we know Joe.
I met him through, I used to promote for like clubs too, like all ages clubs. And I met him through one of his friends, a promoter. And he told me, you know what, if you want to start fighting, I know some guy that can help you out. His name is Joe Camacho. Have you heard of him? He's like, yeah, he's a King of the Cage champion, 155er, you know. So he gave me his name. I texted him and I met him. He used to do striking in Bell Gardens with some guy named John. And I met Joe at a gas station. And I don't have a car, you know. So I was walking in my bag and I was right there in the gas station. He met up and he pulled me up. He took me to that gym and I started sparring. And I didn't know nothing, jiu-jitsu or nothing. But the guy told me, oh, do you have any MMA experience? I was like, just not. I just did boxing and wrestling. I actually had an amateur boxing coming out. I was like, oh, I'm going to put you with some guy. He's a 135 pounder. He's a pro MMA fighter. He has 3 fights. I was like, cool, cool. I didn't know nothing about MMA. So I just started boxing with them. And I took him down. And the coach was like, whoa, you know how to wrestle? I was like, yeah.
And who's that? Was that Orlando?
Yeah, Orlando.
I grew up with that guy.
Yeah,
Orlando. 135er or 125er?
He goes up and down. He fights at 125 too. 125, 130. So I took him down, and John was like, oh, what, this kid, you know? And I was barely 19, 18, you know? And we started grappling, whatever, and we started boxing. And my hands, the thing about me, my cardio is really good, you know. Like I run every day at 5:30 in the morning, you know. I'm like a cardio freak, you know. That's like a drug to me, you know. Like cardio, I run every day, Monday through Saturday, you know. Like I love running, you know. So like you can't tell me, oh, you stop running. Like I can't stop running. If I don't run 1, 2, 3 days, like I can't. It's like I'm not working out, you know. So like my cardio was really up here. So he was like gassing out, and I was like, you know, that was my 5th round, and I was still going and going and going. And then Joe Camacho comes in, and he had a lot of experience. That guy hits hard. So he was hitting me hard. So I was just nonstop combinations. And he was, 2nd round, he was gassing out, you know, like, and they're a little older guys, you know. So I was a young guy, and I was still going at it, nonstop. So ever since then, like, thanks to him, he brought me into MMA, and my technique, my experience got better and better. And I, thanks to them, and thanks to Caesar, you know, helping me out with my striking and getting me into, you know, helping me out with Black House, and they're helping me out too, you know. They got me more aggressive, you know. So thanks to him, thanks to everyone helping me out, you know. I'm just, thank God that I'm still here.
Yeah, those guys, we go back, back in the day, it was me, Orlando, we kind of came up the same. We were like, you know, the real small guys and stuff, and we never really fought much. Joe Camacho, Orlando, and myself, we used to skateboard together all the time.
Way
back in the day, we would skateboard around East LA and everything, because that was like, you know, where we grew up and stuff.
From what I understand, Joe still carries a skateboard in his car, and
yeah, he does.
Pull over and just hit a skate park wherever he sees one.
I believe it. I it's still addicting. I actually bought myself a new reissue Paul Peralta board, and I still break that thing out. The only thing is, you know, my oldest daughter, I showed her what a skateboard looked back from back in the day, and she's like, wow, I don't want to ride that thing. It's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I couldn't even find
it. The big old wheels, right?
Well, they're so wide. When I put grip tape on it, they didn't even make grip tape wide enough for it anymore. They had to, like, cut it in a couple pieces.
The fish boards.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, this is how we roll. This is how we used to roll back in 1985, you know?
Yeah, for real.
But, yeah, we used to skate, you know, we used to go to the demos and everything. And you know, Joe was more athletic than the rest of us, but Orlando and myself, we were just, you know, we were the scrawny kids, yeah. You know. And it's just funny how the sport changes people and everyone. He, you know, Orlando went way more striking. I ended up, you know, falling in love with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's what, you know, kept me, you know, going and stuff.
Yeah, those guys helped me a lot, you know. I thank them a lot, you know. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been, like, my hands, my Jiu-Jitsu, you know, my defense. You know, I thank them a lot, you know.
And, cool, really cool guys.
And Joe actually was part of the team with you, too, or Drigo, wasn't he, back in the day?
Joe Camacho?
Yeah, didn't he train with you guys at the New Breed?
I would see him here and there, but...
For a little while,
yeah.
Occasionally he'd come through, but I don't ever think he trained there. I know we used to see him from time to time, but
I think he was at the East LA gym.
When they were with Valdez?
Yeah.
When they used to share the gym there.
Because with Rodrigo Mendez, I never saw him there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He used to pop in once in a while, but
he used to be like everywhere. He used to go like.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like he's ever really been exclusive to anybody.
I mean, he's got a black belt from somebody.
I think it's Aloysio Silva.
Yeah.
So yeah. And he promotes a hell of a fight. I mean, he knows how to sell tickets.
He's a very good promoter.
he was from East LA. He went to Garfield, you know. Yeah. So yeah. He was a East LA boy too. So you know.
No, I you know, like that guy is great marketing.
Yeah.
The guy's mm-hmm. got a gift for that.
Yeah. Yeah. But even back in the days when he was skating and stuff too, he'd always have. He knew exactly how to get, you know, people to go to the demos and everything to go watch him skate and everything. Yeah, he's always been very good at that.
Yeah.
You skate, Rodrigo?
No.
Isn't it funny that a lot of skaters kind of go towards the fighting? I think Roy used to skate too.
I can't skate for crap. I hit you with a skateboard, but
and a lot of guys do jiu-jitsu surf actually.
Yeah,
I'll do that either. How about you, Rod?
I really can't do shit, to be honest.
I just paint.
Can you play?
I could do.
Can you play canicas or pogs?
You know, I never got into pogs. I did like marbles, yeah, canicas. I used to play that.
Yeah, the big jug.
Chris,
yeah,
get his number.
We're gonna have a marble contest. That don't even sound right, dude.
No, but actually, one time I tried playing it, and I guess there's rules to playing it.
To what? Playing what?
Canicas?
Yeah. Is there?
There is.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't know that. You know?
I remember that you had to hit the boulder 10 times for you to keep it, right?
Yeah.
What? I just know they had the big old marbles,
that's
right?
Boulder. Yeah, that's boulder. Yeah. Yeah. And then the little small ones, it's called peewees. The little small ones, peewees. Wow. And then there's little rules that you can say, oh, rainbows, get closer to the canica. So you do rainbows, you get closer, and that's how you get the other. There was so many tricks to it. So.
Hey, dude, Caesar's looking at you, bro. Like, dude.
Nah, you know. That's
hey, you're a fighter. No more canica talk.
Hey, this show's got range. Everything from last week it was weather.
We covered like Pasadena, not cleaning up dead leaves.
And you know, we got a little bit of time left, but I almost forgot through the whole show. We are live, and if you got any tips on, you know, playing canicas, you can still call the show at 1-800-893-9562. If you got any strategies and tips on pogs or canicas, we want to hear from you.
Chatter wants to tell you how to make rainbows, till you get there. Till you hit the canicas.
Chatter making rainbows. There must be a YouTube video on that, dude.
It probably is.
I'm going to bing that, dude.
I remember pogs. I just couldn't afford them.
How did you play pogs?
I remember seeing kids. I'll tell you what I used to play. When I was like in junior high school, we used to get, you know, the little napkin with a spoon, and we used to play spoon break.
I remember that.
Pencil break.
Pencil
break.
Because
I used to sell my lunch ticket for 50 cents, you know? Yeah. And then I would just go buy something. But we used to play pencil break right there, or make little triangles and play football.
Those I remember. I never liked the pogs. I thought it was
hot hands. We play hot hands.
Oh, I remember.
Hot hands.
Well, we used to play with a quarter, so you'd like flip the quarter and say like five heads, right? And if it landed on tails, then you have to put the quarter on your hand, and it would just whack you five times.
So you'd
be all welted up.
If not rock, paper, scissors, and you hit them right next by the bicep.
With the two fingers.
Two fingers.
Did you guys ever play that game where, like, I guess the guy holds his breath and then someone, like, slams him against the wall? And
oh, yeah. That's called attempted homicide.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay, forget it.
Hey, I think you're going too deep.
No, no, dude. He's got deeper. Oh, yeah. So what did you guys do? You guys hold each other's breath and throw one into the wall?
The guy would cross his arms and, like, hold his breath or blow all the breath out. And then the guy would, like, just, like, shove him into the wall so the guy would kind of like pass out. He already has no air in his
back. That's
on Ridge.
No. Hey, let's get a video of that.
That's what we did before the cans of computer cleaner were around, huh?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I don't even know about that.
Yeah.
Oh, Rich. Dude.
You just opened an ugly door, Rich.
Oh, the 90s.
I was wondering what all those cans at your house were for.
Wrapped in black tape.
I didn't even write.
All the things you should do as a kid.
I didn't do none of that stuff. I used to hop on the back of an ice cream truck. You know, get a free ride, dude. Or the RTD.
But they'd always stop.
Or the RTD.
If they knew you were sitting on the bumper, they'd stop. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
get off.
Yeah, they got the big window. We used to hop on the back of the RTDs for a free ride. Yeah. Probably don't remember RTD.
Sucking
right?
Exhaust.
MTA now.
Yeah, MTA now. It used to be called the Rough, Tough, and Dangerous.
I was probably still in my mom's stomach.
Probably.
Dude, your parents weren't even thinking about you yet, dude. I mean, seriously.
That's where my dad used to work, RTD.
He did?
And then it turned into MTA, but
yeah.
I have a bunch of like, little medals and stuff with RTD.
Little tokens for the bus pass?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. Old school.
But now that you moved on with...
That's a pretty cool jacket. Right? Okay,
thank you.
That's something that like Mask would wear, right? Or is that one of his?
Yeah, He wore this a couple times. I kind of customized this one. I put a patch on the back, like the bomber girl.
Oh, right. Nice.
So
that's pretty cool.
Is that your artwork?
How would you classify that? Like a military kind of jacket or what?
Yeah, military jacket.
Yeah. Now the shirt you're wearing, is that from your latest?
Yeah, this is mine.
Oh, okay.
The Painted Demons. That's a little demon riding a shark.
So. The demon looks cartoony, like one of them old school cartoons.
Yeah, that was an idea. Like I like doing stuff that's kind of like more like vintage looking because it never goes away.
Kind of like Felix the Cat,
yeah.
I don't know.
I've gotten that a lot actually, and I wasn't even thinking about that. What I was thinking was just those old classic black and white cartoon characters. But yeah, I was in Vegas and some guy's like, oh, Felix, it looks like Felix the Cat. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Did you say, hey, hold your breath and cross your arms real quick? I'll show you Felix the Cat.
And any other artists have you been thinking about working with? Any other collaborations you've been working on?
You know, I don't know. I've never really worked with people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's...
That didn't come out right, dude.
No, yeah, it doesn't. But I mean,
I've seen
artists like do the like, collaborations and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm the type of person that's like, no, like I have an idea how I want it.
Yeah.
And I'd rather be angry at myself if it doesn't come out right than to like...
But if somebody wanted to hire you for something, you're freelance, right? So
yeah.
They can go to your website. What's the website?
PaintedDemons.com.
Okay, and then go on there and contact you and
just
spray paint up their house.
Whatever they want.
Whatever they want, right?
Yeah.
As long as they pay you before.
I mean, I do a lot of graphic design, you know. So that's what I've done for probably 11 plus years now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I also...
Photoshop or Corel Draw?
Photoshop.
Okay, I just thought I'd ask.
And Adobe Illustrator.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's all the same, really. It's just slightly different. People have their preferences.
Mac or PC?
Mac. Yeah.
Okay. I just thought we'd cover it all, man, you know?
For all these, I'm telling you, we got range, man. For all you tech heads out there.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you can catch a show on Stitcher, too. You can download the Stitcher app.
Definitely Canicos.
All right.
Yeah Stitcher.
I'll call you.
iTunes? Oh, yeah, you can get the show on iTunes.
You should make a shirt of Canicas, and, you know, that'd be a new
that you know what, awesome. Dude?
Yeah.
I'd buy it. I would.
Oh, dude, come on.
Sponsor Cheddar's shirt with the rainbow and
okay, dude, no Canicas. Rainbow. We go black and go, like, black and whites, and Felix the Cat, like, bam, going at it, hitting a boulder.
That's a good idea.
Yeah?
Think about that, and what else?
Jose Huerta.
Cheddar. like some canicas inside a block of cheese.
I was actually thinking of making a shirt that said banned from Canada because I almost got deported again.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? So, what happened?
How do you get deported from Canada?
Well, because last year I went to do another job over
there. Get this hoser out of here.
And then they were like, why are you here? I'm like, oh, I'm here for work. And I guess you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to say, I'm here to hang out with my friends or whatever. Because I guess if you're going there for work, you have to take a labor...
Work visa?
Something like that. And it's called a labor census, and it takes about 30 days. And they have to see if they can hire somebody from within the country. And, you know, and if they can, then, you know, there's no reason to give jobs to foreigners.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Especially this hoser.
Yeah.
What were you there for? Were you there to do some painting?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So they deported me, and, yeah.
You felt all illegal, dude?
Yeah.
Go home. You know. Did you go home and take a shower?
Dude, I was pissed. This is Thanksgiving, too.
How do Canadian customs people, how do they work, dude? I mean.
Get out of here, E.
All right, hoser.
It wasn't fun. But anyways, so this time around, I wrote on my application, oh, I'm here to see friends. And then they confiscate. I guess there's, I have some kind of record now. And so they didn't buy it. They confiscated my phone.
These hosers tried to work.
Dude, really? They took your phone?
Yeah, they took my phone. They opened up my bag. And sure enough, I have a bunch of like paintbrushes and stuff. And so they could already see from last time that I had been deported for trying to paint something.
So, attempting to work again, eh?
Yeah. So they...
guys' Canadian accents are horrible.
Yeah, they actually are horrible.
That's like an East LA accent.
Yeah, they didn't sound like that.
It sounds like some drunk guy at the bar.
It sounds like an East LA accent.
Yeah, thank you.
You want a taco, eh?
No, but they were really cool this time. They cut me some slack, and they just told me I had to get a work permit.
Yeah.
So I got a work permit, and they let me through.
Yeah. You'd have with more Irish.
A boot.
Wrong continent.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it could be an Irish-Canadian.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well.
Well, there's French-Canadian.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, don't tell them, dude. Oh. You're not Canadian. We are Quebecers.
It's very different over there.
Yeah. Yeah. They got a nice Ford plant out there, Montreal. That's all I know.
So with your time with Tapa, did you get to go do like any UFC events? Did you get to go hang out with them over there?
Yeah, I went to a couple shows, UFC shows, but
so you like it? You like it being there, or do you like it on TV?
I honestly like watching on TV.
I do too, man. People think I'm crazy, but I think you get to see everything better. Yeah. When you go to a live event, are you just watching the people? Or, what's going on over here?
It depends how close you sat, though.
Well, I guess, but even if you sit close and you got to worry about some 6'8" dude in front of you and he's got a big old.
So you can't hear Rogan commentary, you know, when you're watching it live. Yeah. You can't hear him get all excited.
I mean, you guys like watching boxing live? Like, you like being there?
I like it live, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's because it's two different stages, man. The cage as opposed to the ring. With the ring, I mean, there is a thing as being too close to the ring. Like, I don't know about you, but. Even when I'd be in press row, the first thing I'd do, I'd move up to the first seat I could find above the floor level just so I could watch a fight that I wanted to watch because I hate having that guy in front of me who's going to jump up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like the boxing. I like it more live. MMA, more on TV because of the replays. Sometimes with the ground stuff, you really can't really get a good view of it.
And sometimes you miss stuff in MMA.
Oh, yeah,
if you would have watched the Fedor Dan Henderson fight live, you would have been like, well, what happened? Then it wasn't on the replay. You could see when he snuck that punch in.
That was a crazy fight.
It was, dude. I mean, for the
what are the odds of knocking somebody out from behind like that?
Well, I mean, you're right, but he must have hit that dude hard, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Henderson's already missing a bunch of his teeth, so he don't care. You know he hits hard. I mean, he does. Yeah. You see him take his mouthpiece out and slip his teeth in, but...
What's the deal with the way he walks?
I don't
know. He's a wrestler.
I don't know. Maybe that's why he got into wrestling.
Does he have a back problem or something?
He's got it, dude.
Maybe he saw that cauliflower throwing off his balance.
Yeah, something. He's got a funny walk.
He's what is he, 36 or something?
I think he's older.
He's older.
Yeah, right. I mean,
he's
older. His body's.
He's
in his 40s.
Oh, yeah. 41. I mean, his body's got to be beat up. I mean, to be a competitive athlete at that level, and obviously he's in great shape because he'll cut weight down or he'll go. So he's putting in the work and the time for the camps and stuff. So, but, you know, your body can only take so much. I mean, after a while, your joints start hurting from just punching. You probably even fighting, your knuckles start hurting.
And how's training for you nowadays, Raju?
I try to get in 3 if possible.
A month?
Sometimes it feels like that, but I try to do 3 a week. Usually it's more like 2. Something pops up. I mean, for me, like, work is priority.
Yeah.
Well, you're on the morning crew, so I never get to see you in the gym.
Yeah, I try to go to the 11 o'clock class and do my jiu-jitsu. And for a while, I was doing the MMA, but it's just I end up spending, like, 5 hours in the gym.
Yeah.
It's way too much, yeah.
Take away from your painting time.
Well, it's the time I make money, so.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to bust up.
Bills.
You don't want to bust up your hands neither, and you know.
Yeah.
In an MMA class.
Yeah. It's. I think more than anything, I don't know if it's that I'm not used to it, but I always my shoulders start going out when I started doing MMA because of all the punching.
Mm-hmm.
I tore my rotator cuff years ago, so I think that's probably maybe has something to do with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's easy for me to wake up and, like, my shoulder's gone because I slept the wrong way. That's how jacked it is.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part about, you know, the sport and everything is, like, you know, you want to be able to train 100% all the time and then injuries come about and, you know. I'm sure everyone in this room knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. I used to train more in MMA, but because it's so painful, something always hurts.
Yeah.
I just stick to boxing. In reality, boxing.
Well, even in boxing, I would imagine, you know, wrist injuries, hand injuries.
At least not me. Not as much. Your hands, yeah, you know, but mostly like if you catch punches, your jaw's a little messed up. But not like MMA. I mean, in MMA, you get slammed and your legs are bruised, your arms, and you know, you get armbarred or whatever. Somebody goes a little too far, and your elbows are tweaked, and it's pretty painful. It really is. Compared to boxing, at least to me, I don't know about these guys, but...
What do you guys think? The pit and the chatter over here?
I know. Have you done any grappling?
Me? No, I haven't. Just messing around the couple times I've been to Black House, but no, it's not for me. I'm away from that chatter here. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you had all that time wrestling, so you...
Yeah,
I'm kind of used to it, but sometimes I do, like... I get a lot of pain in my groin, like a lot. Like, you know, a lot of, you know, every time I shoot, I defend it, you know, put the hip in, yeah.
No,
it's not that. It's like the groin, like right next to, like, your hip bone. So now I used to have a little ball, now it went away, you know.
It's like a hernia, isn't it?
Yeah,
it wasn't that. I went to a doctor. It's just like a little pool muscle.
You got a real doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure, dude. I know someone who knows somebody.
Hey, don't knock him, dude. I had
the
you know,
mom of the kid.
I went to a Sovaloda today.
That's the one.
Yeah. Hey, dude, I had acupuncture and a Sovaloda at the swap meet, bro.
Don't knock it, dude.
How much is
those guys would do the trick?
It was $20, man. I got like acupuncture and
with
like
dirty needles, dude.
No, I don't know, but they covered my eyes, and I'm like, damn, what the hell is going on, dude? And I'm like,
they covered my eyes. That didn't even right, dude.
It didn't sound good, dude.
I want a prostate exam.
No, actually, that was $10 extra, dude. I don't want to pay that. But you never know what you can get at the indoor, dude. You know, I get my gi fixed. You know, they rotated the tires on my car, and you know.
Stereo.
You went to Alameda Swap Meet, didn't
you? All of it for $12.
Yeah, Alameda Swap Meet. I knew Alameda Swap Meet. And he's absolutely right, dude, because I used to take a couple of fighters, dude. I don't know if you remember Robert Garcia, the dude who fought Antonio Margarito in Mexico.
Right.
I was working with him for a while. Ray was managing him. And I remember first week there, hey, dude, I need a sports massage. Booyah, Alameda Swap Meet, dude. $25 for a 45-minute session. He was good as new, man.
Right there in the swap meet, though, dude?
Yeah, dude. They have, like there's four different people doing sports massages. One of them does acupuncture, and he's actually at the back of, at the very end of the Alameda Swap Meet. You go in there, him and his wife are there, boom, just...
You know what I like about the swap meet, though? Because I know someone who goes, like, Pico Rivera swap meet and gets, like, acupuncture. But you can go to swap meet and just bargain. Like, I go to different places to see who's going to sew on my patches for cheaper on my gi. Like, $5, $4, $3. I'm like, all right, I'm at the $3 spot, you know? So it's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, you never know what you can get down there.
Alameda's a little too... Well, I mean, I'm in that part of LA all the time, but...
Well, you talk about one-stop shopping. That beats Walmart any day, dude. You can go
on
the
back.
Yeah, but you make them out, your car be gone.
Well, you know, you can go on to the back and get a Mika, too, if you want.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I think my uncle used to go there to get all his, was it, green card and all that crap.
I'll plead guilty, dude.
You just got a Pacific. No, you just got a Pacific for that, dude.
Dude, I'm not going to mention any fighter's name. But whenever at the last minute, guys who came with no visa, if I needed to get a Social Security card,
Alameda Swap Meet.
It was done deal.
Dude. Done deal, dude.
I heard it's harder now, though.
Well, see,
Ice Agents downstairs.
If they're fighting in Arizona, dude, you can get away with it.
Really?
Because their commission's just so lax. Hear that, Arizona?
Or why don't you just go to New Mexico? Just put new in front of their Mexican ID.
With the Sharpie on.
Yeah, with the Sharpie, with the typewriter, old school.
Well, no.
That's how they made the Woody card, the Social Security card, with the typewriter, old school.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like we're running out of time, but actually, before we go, we have some people we really want to say thanks to, and I mean, first and foremost, you guys that stopped into the studio. Where can we find you guys if someone wants to get in contact with you? Starting with you, Cheddar, where can people find you?
Jose Huerta. Let's call him Jose Huerta. Because people are going to be like, who's Cheddar?
You can look me up on Facebook, True Jose Huerta. You can look it up on Facebook or my email, truefocus2010 gmail.com.
Okay. True Focus. T-R-U-E.
Yes.
Okay. Catch you on Facebook for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Mine is basically the same thing. You can find me on Facebook.
You have True Focus too?
No.
True Focus.
No, man, I'm on Facebook. You can just search my name, Roy Tapia, R-O-Y-T-A-P-A, and you'll find me.
Gotta sell that YouTube video, dude. Get some hits out there for Black House, man. I mean, it's a really good video, dude. Seriously.
I do. You know what? I'll throw it up on the Mad Time.
Yeah,
on the Mad Time Facebook page today, so you guys can check it out. Real well done.
The Black House website too.
Yeah.
Somewhere, man.
Shout it out.
They're all Black House, dude. I mean,
you can get in contact with me too through the Black House.
Okay, Black House MMA, right on.
Yeah, Black House MMA and their fighters. I'm right there.
Too. Oh, awesome.
Oh, okay, all right on.
Yeah.
And same thing with me. Usually the Facebook, that's the thing now, right?
So yeah.
Facebook, Caesar Garcia, or Black
House.
There's
going to be 1,000 of those, dude.
Yeah.
There's a slow day at the border.
There's a famous guy,
dude.
Caesar Garcia.
And then there's a slow day at the border. Not just the Canadian one.
Is there a famous guy?
There's a famous guy that he came out in I think one of those Fast and Furious movies.
Uh-huh.
He came out in, and there's one that fights. I think he fought at the Alameda Swap Meet on Friday, right? Caesar Garcia.
That ain't right, dude.
Yeah, no, he really did.
In the parking lot, or?
Dude, we did 2 Solo Bulk sale fights out of that parking lot, right, man?
Oh, really?
Yeah. You don't believe me?
Where'd you park the cars? On the railroad tracks?
No, dude, actually up on the side of the Alameda Swap Meet, twice, dude, we shot Solo Bulk sale from there. One time was one night we had a horrible storm, dude, and 400 people still showed up.
That's crazy. But blackhousemma.com. And or Facebook.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, also, man, thanks to Ed Suarez for calling in, dude. That was
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty awesome of that dude to call in.
And Rodrigo, what was your website again?
It's paintofdemons.com.
Hey, don't you got like a Vector website too, or is that something? I know you always on your Facebook, you always have Vector stuff up there. Like, I don't know what it is because I'm not. But I'm like, all right, I'll take some eagle wings or something, whatever it is you got on for that month.
Yeah, it's basically like a stock art website where graphic artists could go and purchase or I also have free downloads.
Hey, why would they do that, though? Is it like because you've already created them? So
yeah.
Okay.
So they don't have to actually draw them themselves, or maybe they don't know how to draw.
Okay.
So there's already like an eagle or a monster that they like, and they want to make a shirt with that graphic, so they just go there.
That's like royalty free stuff.
Yeah.
I guess some of the stuff they can pay for, and they can just use it for whatever they want.
Yeah.
But have you used that stuff before, and you just said, "All right."
Yeah, I've designed a couple tap out shirts with it. It's works.
What's the website for that?
That's vectorbrush.com.
Okay.
If people want to check that stuff out, it's more than welcome.
Yeah, I know. I was on there the other day, and I know you had like a koi fish and.
Yeah.
Tiger.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't want to do design shirts, like let's say you're like, oh, I want to have that as a tattoo, you could download it, you could print it out, take it to your tattoo guy, and there you go.
I was trying to get the tiger and the koi fish in the tiger's mouth, but it wasn't working very well for me.
All right, well, yeah. We do have some people here. want to start off with Decomp Clothing.
Yeah, shout out to Decomp.
Yeah, Decomp Clothing for coming in studio. Who else we got?
Well, shout out to Noah Tillis. He's got his own place. You can check him out, Noah Tillis. Or it's TillisBJJ.com. He just opened up his spot.
And then let's not forget Moya Brand.
Yep.
Jesse Moya and Chris.
Yeah. Thanks. Those guys helped us out a lot. They got some guys that come through, so appreciate that. We also had a couple guys from Millennia MMA come through.
And let's not forget Build-A-Grill Cooper.
Yep.
Build-A-Grill Cooper. And our friends, Chris Wolford and John Iwanu, our friends, our coaches, our mentors at Iwanu International.
Yeah, you just go Iwanu.com, check them out. We also had Steven and Sharoop. Shout out to Sharoop and Steven from Fight Me Clothing come through.
Yeah, and then Rodrigo Medeiros. With BJJ Revolution team.
Yeah, yeah. If you're out in, what is it, Pacific Beach?
Pacific Beach, yeah.
Yeah, you can go check out PB Fight Center. Go online. Rodrigo, Rodrigo came through that lineage too.
And also from Millennia, Daryl Montague, the Mongoose.
The Mongoose. Yeah, I seen a YouTube video of him too.
And Little Tony Pacinski.
Little Tony Pacinski came through.
Yeah, he was also BJJ Revolution team, right?
Yeah, also BJJ Revolution team. He was up, he's under Rodrigo Medeiros too. Rodrigo Medeiros, I should say, right? I'm gonna get. We also had a couple of the guys that actually trained with you guys over at Maywood Boxing. We had Larry, the Body Snatcher, Cervantes.
Luis Mora.
Yeah, Luis, the Mayor Mora, in Santiago El Lobito.
Yeah.
Guevara.
And then our buddies from Chingazos MMA, they came through also.
Yeah. Rolando was his government name, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Eddie and Pat, dude, those guys are from Chingazos MMA. If you haven't checked them out, pretty good stuff.
Can you guys say that on the radio?
What, Chingazos MMA?
Yeah.
Claro que sí.
Well, dude, Rodrigo dropped an F-bomb earlier. It's okay, dude.
That's
yeah.
All good.
You want to drop? You want to drop a bad? Go ahead, dude.
No, I'm good.
You sure? Yeah, whatever you want, dude.
Keep it classy. It's all good.
Okay.
And also a big thank you to everyone that downloaded the show and that tunes into the show. This is why we do this. We do this for all you listening out there. We really appreciate you all. And we want to come back next year with a stronger show. And we want to hear from you. We want to hear your feedback and anything. Hit us up on Facebook at Mad Time Radio or on Twitter. Man, when we're gone, you can download our show on iTunes, the past shows. You can catch up if this is your first show that you're catching or anything else to fill the time. And if you like what you hear, hey, tell a friend. It's a free gift. You can give the gift of Mad Time Radio this year. It don't cost you nothing.
$3.99. Yeah.
I just wanted to give a shout out to my sponsors, Cootie Tire out in the city of Paramount. Any of you guys, driving semis, big trucks, get your tire pop. You guys need someone to change your tire, look them up, Cootie Tire. Tell them I sent you, man. He'll hook you up. And another one, too. My SoCal Burgers out in LA. I want to give the owner Tony a shout out. Man, he's a really great guy. He does a lot. He helps me out, and he's been with me since before I turned pro. So he was my first sponsor that had some faith in me and took me up. And you can find that at a 203 South Menick Avenue in East Los Angeles.
All right,
Menick.
East Menick. Go out there, SoCal Burgers. Tell him I sent you, man. He'll show you.
They have those car shows on Friday nights.
That's
cool,
right.
Man. Yeah, it's a pretty cool spot.
So if I go there and I said, hey, listen, Roy sent me over here to come get a hamburger.
Yeah, man, he'll hook it up.
Take it out of his next purse.
We'll order a hamburger special and tell him to throw in the extra queso for free, huh?
Yeah, extra cheddar.
Extra cheddar. How about you, Jose? You got any sponsors yet, buddy?
I just had one big friend of me. It's from Black Garden. It's BG Clothing.
Okay.
Go look him up at bgclothing.com. He helped me out. I was in my third fight, amateur. He hooked me up a bunch of shirts and I gave them out. So,
all right.
Big thanks to him and Black House, of course. And
yeah. All right. Well, thanks again.
What about Caesar? We got any sponsors, Caesar?
Nobody sponsored. My wife.
Oh, dude. Shout out to your wife, dude.
Big ups to my wife, Erica. She sponsors me on everything.
Rodrigo?
No sponsors.
Come on, dude. You gotta throw your website out there.
You want to sponsor somebody?
Never mind.
You want to sponsor me and Roy?
Sure, that sounds good actually.
Yeah.
There it is,
dude. Yeah. Ganika shirts coming your way.
Ganika's in
with the pog on the back.
That'd be pretty cool.
What do you got? Painteddemons.com, right?
Yeah, painteddemons.com, vectorbrush.com, and just like to thank you guys and everybody else that follows whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, I know you got a pretty good following on that stuff, dude. No, so no more art shows for you.
None that I want to put together.
A lot of work, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't even. All right. How about you, Richard? Got any sponsors?
Yeah, no.
Hector, since we're going down the.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Hey, shout out to Mike. He's in the studio. Mike, what's up, Mike Lascaris?
What's up, Mike?
Want to come over here and say what's up on the mic, dude?
Yeah.
All right, dude. He's still asleep. If you go to his Facebook, he's always sleeping.
Yeah, and if there's anyone out there listening and you're in the area, hit us up. We'll be at Hank's Bar.
After wait a minute. You guys want to hit up your shout out to your friends outside the window there?
Yeah. I got a few people listening right now around, and I just want to give, you know, everyone a shout out. Thank you for, you know, tuning in and supporting. And shout out to my mom. You know, I love you, Mom. I know she's listening.
Mom's
and,
cool.
Yeah, I want to thank all of you guys for having me. And shout out to my friend George Solo, and that's my girlfriend Griselda.
All right,
everybody. Well, be safe this holiday, and
next. What we got next Sunday is Christmas.
Next Sunday, then we got New Year's.
Santa's
Eve.
Birthday, and then and then it's New Year's, right?
Yep.
And we'll be back next year. We got a lot of good guests lined up for next year for you guys too. So that'd be kind of exciting.
Yep. And so until next year, that's it. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, happy man. Holidays,
happy
everybody.
New Year, everybody.
Yes, sir.
TV doesn't work!